British Spy Stories, Season 2, The Kill Order. Episode 18. Daria has been fussing over her new guests in location Epsilon 4 since Panama had arrived with Hans and Gabby in the early evening. She had insisted that they have her house speciality of Kletsky and Mashanka, with Belarusian beer. They have been arguing over the ethics of removing Irina and Jacob by force versus coaxing them to go into hiding. Hans is firmly of the view that they must go voluntarily, while Gabby is more about getting the job done, whatever it takes. Panama sits between them, both physically and ethically.
"The other issue is where we take them," says Gabby, in a bid to move the conversation away from morality. "I had thought about Berlin, but I'm not sure it will work now."
"We can't fly a kid out of the country," says Hans.
"Unless we got cover passports for them," says Panama.
"Is anywhere in Belarus safe from Babu?"
She looks at Panama.
"He's not as good as he thinks. But anyway, I have an idea."
The others look at him.
"Go on." "My family has a house over in the west near the Polish border. It's in the middle of the Balawija forest, which stretches for hundreds of kilometers."
"How big is the house?"
12 bedrooms."
Hans and Gabby look at each other, and Hans raises an eyebrow. Panama feels the need to justify it.
"My grandfather bought it in the Soviet era. He was a good party member."
"We don't care about how you got it," she says. "Can it be protected?"
"There's a long driveway to the main road. It's the only way to get out there because the forest is so dense all around it."
"Sounds perfect," she says. "All we've got to do is convince Irina to go there."
She smiles at Hans in her acknowledgement of giving ground to his point of view. Streaks of moonlight form a crisscross pattern in Lily's spare room as Catherine sits on the bed at almost exactly midnight. She is still dressed, and her brain is not letting her disengage. Her memories are still opaque, and it worries her slightly that any events in the field can have spooked her so much. She's trained exactly for this sort of thing. She should be able to cope. It was the surprise element that had got to her. She had chosen to be a sniper, as it gives her the luxury of being able to plan and predict what will happen. And now, it all seems out of her control. She lies back on the bed and closes her eyes. The first thing she hears is a footstep outside. Her instincts kick in, and she can feel her body tension rise. She has no weapons to protect herself this time. The remote noises continue, and she hears scratching at the front door to Lily's flat. Then a push of air from the outside as the door is opened. Catherine rises off the bed and walks to the door of her room, opening it a few millimeters to get a view of the staircase beyond. There is little light in the void outside, but she can see enough to know the intruder is exploring the lower floor. She pushes the door back into the frame, then looks around her room for anything she can use as a weapon. But there's nothing. She only has two advantages: surprise and the dark. Catherine takes up a position in the far corner of the room, where no moonlight can penetrate. She laces her fingers, feeling the muscles and tendons under her skin. The footsteps begin their ascent of the stairs. Catherine breathes steadily, using her preparatory regime that she follows before a sniping kill. She's calm. All of her sinews are poised for the next few seconds. The door handle turns, and the door opens, scraping slightly on the wooden floorboards. The intruder stops, looking around. She can see they are wearing a skiing balaclava to hide their face, and they have a handgun raised at shoulder height. By his bulk, she can tell it's a man, muscular and well-trained. This is no amateur, like the attacker in the farmhouse. He steps across the floor and around to the side of the bed.
making a cursory check of the wardrobe and the void next to it against the wall. He retraces his steps around the bed to the side where Catherine is standing. He's 4 feet from her now and stops to listen. She holds her breath. Suddenly he looks up directly at her. She's not sure if he can see through the dark, but she moves anyway. Catherine pushes all of her body weight straight at him and brings one fist up into his diaphragm. The air escapes from his mouth in a guttural sigh. He is momentarily off balance, but recovers and turns to her, bringing his handgun up to her face. She exhales with an emphatic cry and crashes her forearm onto the gun, forcing his fingers to loosen around the hand grip. She hits it again. This time the weapon falls to the ground, and he turns to recover it. But that is his fatal mistake, as it creates a broader target for her. She takes advantage and kicks him once, and twice, in the crutch. His collapsing frame pushes him onwards towards the floor. She follows his path, and lands with all her weight on his stomach. She punches his face, then again. He is faltering now. She keeps hitting until her arms ache. Then she stops, and he is still. Without warning, his hands come up to her throat. His fingers tighten. Within 5 seconds, her head feels distant, lost in semi-unconsciousness. She fights with everything she has left, but struggles to get enough power in her muscles after the fight and the last few days. She gets a grip of his hands and pulls. She can feel the pain in her arms. She can feel oxygen being drawn away from her lungs. Her head feels light. She closes her eyes. The dizziness builds, and slowly, second by second, the darkness closes in around her head. Lily wakes in her bedroom. The pain in her head is like nothing she has ever experienced before. She thinks back to what she can remember of the events of last night. Her bedroom door had opened in the early hours, and Lily had thought it was Catherine wanting something. But within a few seconds, a hand had pushed a cloth over her mouth and nose, and she had felt suddenly very tired. The next thing she knows was waking up a minute ago. Lily stands up, pulls on her dressing gown and goes out to the landing. The door to Catherine's room is not quite closed, and she pushes it slightly to see if the woman is still asleep, but the bed is empty. Lily goes downstairs, expecting Catherine to be there, but she's not. Lily starts to make tea and find painkillers, thinking all the time where her guest could be. Her phone hums on the sideboard. Lily picks it up and answers after she sees that the call is from her boss.
Lily, are you okay? I found out some more about Catherine Grosvenor. She's from the security services, but they wouldn't tell me more than that.
That explains why she wouldn't tell me about her job.
She's dangerous, apparently, Lily, he says.
She's gone, Martin.
Where?
No idea. Her room's empty.
What? She's gone in the night?
Yes, and I was attacked. I think it was chloroform or something. I remember someone coming into my room. Then it all went blank.
We need to get you out of there, he says. I'll send a car.
Lily runs upstairs to her bedroom, pulls her suitcase from the wardrobe, and starts to pack her things. The light is starting to fade as Ella turns the final corner of the walking route from the supermarket to her flat. She likes her road and the way the lights come on in the winter to make it look like a postcard of an archetypal English street. The slightest of breezes blows into her face. She walks up the path. She gets out her key and turns it in the lock, then carries the bags inside and walks through the kitchen at the back. She was lucky to get a garden flat. Outside, the shrubs remain resolutely naked, awaiting green shoots in the next few weeks as spring starts. Ella unpacks and stores the tins, packets, and jars away in the cupboards, then makes tea and carries her cup into the front room. Stefan's eyes are still open, but he is obviously dead. Blood from wounds in his chest have turned one side of the chair and his clothing a deep maroon. Her fingers loosen around the handle of the mug, and it falls almost in slow motion towards the floor. The crash of the porcelain hits her ears, and her body lunges forward towards him, from vertical, to be at his side.
"No, no, no,"
is all her mind can muster.
"Stefan!"
She slaps his cheek.
"Stefan, no!"
Her voice is a crescendo of pain and anger.
"Wake up for me, darling!"
Her mind flips between the urgency and intimacy.
"Don't leave me!"
She moves her face close to his until her tears fall onto his skin. Then big, gulping sobs scream out from her lungs. Her shoulders lurch forwards and her body is engulfed in the sadness and the loss of dreams. Eventually, there are no more tears inside her, and she is quiet. She rests her head on his chest and lays there until her breathing returns to somewhere close to normal. It's only then that the front doorbell rings. Ella doesn't move. The sound of the bell is out of the context of her world at that moment. The ring comes again, longer this time. She raises her head, as though expecting another ring. But a minute later, there's a knock on one of the glass panels that sit either side of the door, and someone shouts a muffled,
"Hello!"
At last, she moves. Her legs first. Then she rises to standing and walks out of the room and turns towards the doorway. She can see someone on the other side, their shadow taking up most of the visible light through the glass.
"Anyone in?"
Ella stands watching the shadow, not knowing what to do. If they've killed once, they might have come back to kill again. In her house, in her home. If that could happen, anything can happen.
"This is the police. If anyone is in there, please make yourself known."
Her hand trembles on the door latch, but her thoughts have no structure. Her body is racked with fear. Is the shadow telling the truth? She doesn't want to die. A tear falls down her cheek. She doesn't know what to do. She doesn't know anything. Maybe this is the end. She opens the door. The policeman is tall and in his 50s. Concerned but friendly. Like police are supposed to be.
"We just received a call about disturbance, miss." "Are you okay, miss?"
Ella nods, suddenly conscious of the blood on her clothing. Her breaths come short and ineffective.
"Do you mind if I come in, just to make sure?"
he says.
"I'm fine, officer, thank you."
"You look a bit shaken up, miss."
"It's been a long day."
"Maybe I can make you a cup of tea, miss."
"Thank you, I'm fine."
She smiles at him.
"I do need to check all is well, if that's all right with you,"
he says.
"To clear it off the system, you know. Once there's been a report. Just to tie up the loose ends."
He pushes gently at the door. And she doesn't resist.